This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Matt Kozlov. Matt's a principal at managing director at Techstars Los Angeles. He's going to tell us a little bit about Techstars. We've all heard Techstars over the years, and most of us don't know that much about it, even though we've seen the name so much. Talk to us about investing, digital health investing, where we're at in this, and just a lot more. Matt, can you take a moment, tell us about yourself, and tell us about Techstars?
Absolutely. So my name is Matt. I've been a managing director at Techstars for about 6 years. Originally joined to build out our healthcare program with Cedars-Sinai, where we were investing in just phenomenally promising digital health and class one and class two medical device companies. I ran that program for several years. Then I built out another program focused on aerospace and defense for our firm. And now I run Techstars Los Angeles, where I'm investing across multiple sectors. Techstars, as an investment firm, we're about 16 years old, one of the most prolific and active global seed and pre-seed and Series A stage investors. We've invested in close to 3,000 companies since our formation. Our companies are worth over $42 billion in cumulative market cap. We've invested in quite a few high-growth healthcare companies, including PillPack, Well Health, Zipline, which is interestingly both a healthcare and aerospace company. At this rate today, we're investing in about 500 startups a year across the world through close to 50 different accelerator programs. We have quite a few focused on healthcare, including one that we run in Minneapolis with United Healthcare. We also run a program with Melinda Gates' Pivotal Foundation focused on longevity and elder care. And across all of our different city programs, we're investing in several healthcare companies every year. I actually have three coming into my next class this summer.
Magnificent. And you never talk to Melinda Gates about a relationship with Bill, I take it. That's off limits. We don't talk about that.
No. And I would have no information to share on that anyway.
No, I'm totally kidding. Of course. That's an amazing platform and sprawl that Techstars has. Really amazing. And I've heard so much about Techstars over the years, but don't know that much about it. So it's just a pleasure to listen. And one other question about foundational question: committed capital, independent sponsor. I think with that much investment, there must be committed capital. What's the model?
That's correct. So we run multiple different flavors of program. Typically, when we're running a program in partnership with a major corporation like United Healthcare or a nonprofit like Cedars-Sinai, those programs are co-funded by Techstars and our partner. So, you know, we're both investing in the company and sharing the economics when those companies are successful. We also run city programs like Techstars New York, Techstars Boston, Techstars Los Angeles. Those programs are funded by a central fund, which has institutional LPs, family offices, high net worth individuals, but that's funded by a central fund. And then we also have a follow-on fund. As our companies grow and scale, we like to continue to support and invest in those companies and preserve as much of our pro rata as we can. And so that is another fund that has institutional LPs, high net worth individuals, et cetera. So depending on when and how and where we're writing the check, it might have a different funding structure behind it. But the incoming economics for every company accepted to Techstars is the same. We are investing up to $120,000 of capital once the companies are accepted to our program. We take 6% common stock in those companies. Over time we dilute, but we may write additional follow-on checks for some of our companies. We wish we could do it for every company, but unfortunately, capital is not unlimited, although it sometimes feels like it in the market these days.
No, it's a fascinating perspective. It really is. Thank you, Matt. And another question for you. We've invested side by side with one of the major sort of venture capital funds. And when we talk to this, at least one of them, they'll say to us, look, we'll make 10 investments. One of us can return everything five times over in our fund. Three or four are going to be fine, and four to five are likely to fizzle out at some point, would be the perspective. Is that a common perspective? What's your sense of that in the early stage VC investing? What is that What is the perspective on that, of what fizzles, what goes? How do you view that?
That's a great question. I can view that from my own personal portfolio, and then I can sort of zoom up a little bit, you know, across Techstars. So one of the things that gives us as a firm a stronger advantage, and our numbers are actually, you know, I would say better than that. In our analysis, about 85-87% of our companies are, you know, are either acquired or still active and growing. We only have about a 10% failure rate. And there's a number of reasons behind that. One is when we're running an industry program like something with United Healthcare, Cedars-Sinai, number one, we have access to experts who can help us select companies that are addressing a unique need that they themselves have as a potential customer, a potential partner. And so we are investing with this panel of experts. And so I think that gives us some unique insight when we're selecting companies. We're also attracting very high potential companies because of the level of access they're going to have within Techstars to those types of organizations. Across Techstars, we have over 80 corporate partners across every sector you can imagine, and they're typically Fortune 500 organizations who are explicitly working with us because they want to work with startups and want to get high-end pilots off the ground and are committed to being successful with them. So we're getting preferential deal flow as well. And then the third benefit we have is that we surround these founders with just exceptional mentors, exceptional corporate partners who are looking to engage directly commercially with these startups. And so they wind up getting really, you know, strong economic growth very early in their trajectory. And then we can help them find follow-on funding as a result of that. And so it creates this nice virtuous cycle that benefits our portfolio companies quite well. So I'm generally seeing about 50 to 60%, if not higher, of any given cohort are successful in raising a substantial increased valuation round within about 3 to 6 months coming out of our program. And I'm seeing, I don't know, 2 to 3, you know, unicorn scale companies coming out of our program within, you know, out of each program over the course of 3 to 5 years. So, you know, several companies from my first cohort that I ran about 5.5 years ago are now several $100 million companies. And I don't know if that holds across all of Techstars, but we're generally seeing about 1 in 100 of our investments are becoming unicorns.
Really a fascinating ecosystem and thing that you do. And you've spent some time in digital health and health and aerospace and some other industries. I mean, you're really touching some interesting things. And you build this magnificent pipeline in an educational and interesting way. Talk a little bit about digital health, health IT investing. Where are we at in that? Are we in the second inning? Are we in the eighth inning? You know, there's been so much money put to work, so much great success this last year. But are we? Is it late to get into investing there, or is it fine?
You know, I'm not this veteran who was there from, you know, healthcare 1.0 and saw that crash and burn. So I think I missed the first few innings of digital health. I came in 6 years ago when I think was a new wave of startups that were embracing the model of working with payers and providers and willing to engage in the way that healthcare is actually delivered and paid for. So a lot of the companies I have worked with over the last 6 years, you know, were willing to put in the work, learn the game, do the EMR integration, do the hard work of, you know, figuring out how to get a CPT code and going through FDA approvals, and didn't have this sort of naive outsider, we're going to break things and we're going to change the world of healthcare overnight. A lot of the companies that I've worked with, and I would say that probably was the healthcare 2.0, so maybe inning three or inning four of the healthcare innovation cycle. I've been very optimistic about consumer-centric healthcare making its return, especially around primary care. And I think that some of the work that One Medical and Forward and Carbon are doing, and some of the companies like Well Health in my own portfolio, Tasso in my own portfolio, are doing to put the patient experience back in the center while acknowledging how the ultimate experience is going to be paid for and integrate with insurance. I think that that is that has been a very successful wave that we're going to continue to see grow in popularity. And, you know, for me, the one silver lining of the last year and a half has been that I think COVID has been a very productive accelerant for certain patient-centric approaches around triaging, around enabling telehealth, around, you know, bringing healthcare to where the patient needs to be in an efficient way. And so a lot of my companies have actually had, you know, a lot of growth over the last year and a half. And I don't think that's going to go away. I think that health systems and payers and pharmaceutical companies are, you know, are adapting to a, you know, more remote distributed membership. And I think that will continue to go that way. And I think that we'll see some really interesting entrants when Amazon rolls out their new service, when telehealth becomes the norm, not the exception. I think that we're going to see a lot of really interesting technologies roll out. And I think patients' relationships with their health systems and their insurers are going to change a lot. And I think they'll probably have more healthcare relationships with technology companies.
And so you would see, so for example, in the last year, the stats are something like, and again, you know, $14 billion invested in digital health, and of that, 20% plus in consumer-centric, direct-to-consumer digital health. Do you see that number growing significantly, the massive efforts that are direct-to-consumer? Is that one headline I hear from you?
I do think so, but I think it's going to be hybrid. You know, I think if you look at, you know, I just joined One Medical last week, and, you know, I'm still paying through insurance, but I'm paying an additional fee on top of that for convenience and for access to care that would maybe, you know, take weeks for me to get on my own. And I think that kind of hybrid approach, you know, Heal has been doing that in LA for a while. I think, you know, Amazon, when they roll out their new service, is going to show that, you know, all of these walls between employer, payer, provider, technology company, consumer, they're going to become fuzzier and fuzzier. And I think the notion of just a pure play direct to consumer healthcare company, like, I still don't think that I'm going to pay for a medical record service that makes my medical record portability easier. I don't know if that's the answer per se, but I do think that services that blend these worlds together in a patient-centric way are going to be very successful.
Well, and the point also is that the hybrid approach, direct-to-consumer, but also direct-to-consumer scaling through a payer, scaling through a health system, allows these direct-to-consumer efforts to scale a lot easier and a lot more quickly, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, Hims and Roe like have definitely showed that you can build a very successful model that way.
Absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So one last question, Matt, and I'm sensitive to your time and I appreciate your effort and thought so much. What are you most excited about this year? What are you most focused on and most excited about this year?
I'm spending a lot of my time on distributing the lab test and making clinical trial recruitment and clinical trial management a far faster and consumer-centric experience. I don't know when the last time you went and got your blood taken at LabCorp or Quest, but it's not a very pleasant experience. And I think the more that we can meet patients where they are, reduce the pain, reduce the anxiety, and bring technologies into the home that allow for a more democratized access to clinical trials and new specialty medicines, new diagnostic tests, you know, more recurring, more frequent diagnostic tests, easier to order diagnostic tests, I think that's going to unlock an enormous amount of value up and down the patient experience, the pharmaceutical experience, the provider experience. And so I'm, you know, there's a company called Tasso Inc. that is doing at-home blood draw without phlebotomy. I think that company is going to be on a very successful trajectory. TruePill and a company called Butterfly Labs are trying to make sample collection as easy as an API for telehealth companies. I think that's a really interesting approach. There are companies like DeepSix AI, which is using natural language processing to analyze unstructured text in the medical record to facilitate much more rapid clinical trial recruitment, which is very long and painful and manual under the old way of doing things. So I really see a lot of opportunity there.
Fantastic. Matt, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us in the Vector Private Equity Podcast. I got a tremendous education today. I thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us. I know our audience will love it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.